Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The deep state wins again. It didn't take long for Trump to adopt Biden's failed foreign policy on Ukraine. The Ukraine conflict is far from over. Also, another front is opened. The war on BRICS is on full display, all in the name of maintaining dollar hegemony. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He is an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here in Moscow. Tomorrow, Monday, we're expecting a major announcement from the president about Russia and the conflict in Ukraine. I surmise that it has to do with sanctions, something that Lindsey Graham and others in the Senate have been pushing. We've all seen that sanctions don't work. I don't believe there's any reason additional sanctions will work. But Mark, so has Trump just reverted to the Biden policy on Ukraine? And we hear from Europeans, from the German Chancellor Merz, that diplomacy has been exhausted. I didn't even know it had been tried. So a lot of mixed messages here, but the policy is very rigid and it continues from the previous administration. Am I wrong?
Well, we don't know exactly, of course, what Trump is going to say on Monday. He does surprise us sometimes. He is fairly chaotic, quixotic and unpredictable, but everything he has said in the last week, expressed his unhappiness, his frustration, his anger, referring to President Putin in the most vulgar terms, nothing but BS. You know, it's everything he says is meaningless, which, you know, I mean, certainly President Trump plays to Trump's narcissism and an ego to manipulate him, like every world leader does, because Trump is eminently manipulatable. He courts it. I mean, he enjoys it. Everyone in his administration does the same thing. So it's really no surprise there. But certainly Russia hasn't made any concessions. They haven't backed down an inch. And while Trump may not, you know, may have contempt for Zelensky and the European elites and may not carry personally very much about Ukraine, he's still the leader of U.S. global hegemony, and he has to do what he can to save a U.S. proxy regime in Kiev. This was always inevitable. So it is either going to be sanctions, perhaps Lindsey Graham's bone-crushing sanctions, which aren't really sanctions at all. They're tariffs on the rest of the world. A new tariff war on the rest of the world to try to get them to stop trading with Russia, and a new economic war. And I don't think that is, I think that would be the most disastrous, resulting in the biggest blowback we've yet seen of such sanctions. And weapons packages, again, what good is a weapons package when the Pentagon itself admits that it's out of the weapons that the Kiev regime needs? You know, they can buy them. NATO can buy them, transfer them. It doesn't make any difference if they don't have the weapons to win the conflict.
Well, you know, and George, what's paradoxical here is that Trump is frustrated that this conflict has not come to an end. There has not been a ceasefire, at least defined by NATO and the Trump administration. But what's ironic or paradoxical here is that this will only prolong the conflict, something that he wants to come to an end. So, you know, we're speculating here because the announcement has been made. But it seems to me that anything that is a punishment towards Russia will only lengthen the conflict that Trump is so frustrated with in the first place.
You're absolutely right, Peter. And this was really a key part of the Trump plank, which he has been really running on since 2022, that this war should never happen. This war is crazy. There's nothing in it for the United States. It's entirely Biden's war. And that he, Trump, because of his personal magnetism and because of his shrewd, peaceful, pragmatic intentions, he, Trump, can bring this thing to an end. So he said 24 hours, and then he said, you know, later on, that all because he knows Zelensky well, gets on well with him, well, gets on with Putin. So he said that he would do it. And of course, he hasn't done it. And when he is now recently admitted, well, it's a little tougher than I thought. It makes him look very foolish because anybody could have told him, yeah, it's kind of tough. I mean, there's not an easy solution.
Well, George, I mean, you've mentioned personal magnetism. How has that worked to Trump's advantage when it comes to ending wars? We've only seen him starting conflicts, not ending them. So his personal magnetism is kind of like kryptonite.
It is, and it hasn't worked. And I think Mark is absolutely right. You know, Trump may say, oh, well, you know, Putin is giving us BS. But Putin has been absolutely consistent. He's not changed his position one iota. And so in none of the conversations, I've had, I think, six telephone conversations, in none of the telephone conversations has Putin given any indication that he's likely to change his position. It is Trump who has somehow gone from one thing to another and to another that's really in the way of anything. Now, if he does embrace the Lindsey Graham sanctions package with this 500% tariffs, what is going to cause a crisis? It's going to cause a crisis in oil prices. Well, a crisis in oil prices, that's going to completely destroy his
economy. That's a crisis for Donald Trump.
Exactly. And he's facing midterms, you know, it's just over a year from now. That could be a serious blow to him. If he loses heavily in the midterms, as it's looking likely, he's in a lot of trouble. His domestic agenda gone, and he's facing multiple impeachments that's going to preoccupy him for the next 2 years. So he's bringing on a serious crisis for himself.
You know, Mark, does Iran play at least the stratagem or what he thinks is a strategy when it comes to Iran? Is this in play here? Because Trump has convinced himself and is probably his inner circle that it was a win. You know, it was in bomb out. OK. And all this other kind of pablum that he's been talking about. Is this kind of muscular approach towards Iran, is that going to be adopted towards Russia? I mean, because he believes that was a win. And in his mind, in my mind, that's the only, quote, bizarre win he has gotten. Should we be worried?
I think Trump should be worried. And maybe that means that all of us should be worrying. Trump's art of the deal, such as it is, seems just to be mafia style threats. And then you give me what I want. And when that, shall we say, generously muscular approach doesn't work, then that is, you know, leaves him with no real diplomatic options, because I don't believe the Trump administration has either the expertise, the bandwidth, or the patience to do the real hard work of diplomacy and compromise, which is something the Russians have very quietly been complaining about ever since the re-engagement with the U.S. under the Trump administration. And Iran isn't over. That is going to come back to haunt Trump, because that
Absolutely.
Has just been kicked down the road. The
Absolutely.
Iranians are not giving up on nuclear enrichment. The damage wasn't what it was proclaimed. And Netanyahu was almost certainly back in the United States in the last few days to court Trump and Congress into going back in and, quote unquote, finishing the job of regime changing Iran. I cannot imagine that anything else was what he was primarily pushing. So the whole Iran issue not only is a bad precedent set for relations with Russia and gives Russia even less reason to trust or to engage in any type of ceasefire diplomatic process with Trump, but Iran itself is going to come back to haunt Trump probably even before the midterms.
Yes, some are even saying before the end of the summer. You know, and George, you know, meanwhile, in Europe, we have this war fever developing. It's really quite amazing. It's not a groundswell. It's the elites there that just can't let this Ukraine project. I mean, well, how has it paid dividends for them? I have no idea. So they're just doubling down. Frederick Merz is turning out to be the most dangerous German chancellor since Adolf Hitler. Thoughts?
Yes, exactly. That's Friedrich Merz. And he's part of this plan, which Trump has made clear that this is what he's committed to, which is that NATO And that, by that means, of course, Germany will be buying weapons, buying. So they're going to be paying out of pocket. They're going to be buying.
But George, I thought there weren't any weapons to be purchased.
That's what we heard from the Pentagon itself. This is what the Pentagon itself says. We just don't have anything to spare. But apparently, Friedrich Merz is going to be buying, I don't know, 2, 3, 5 Patriot systems and transferring it lock, stock, and barrel to Ukraine. I don't know where Germany is going to get the money for this. But then that's Merz. And now you had the other day, you had the France's leading general and the actively serving general saying, yeah, we've got to get ready for war, and that we, the French, are Russia's primary enemy in NATO. And then he said, Putin has said that France is, you know, the Russia's primary enemy. When he was asked, when did Putin say this?
I don't know, George. I think the three of us cover this pretty closely here. Okay. So you haven't heard this. I haven't heard this. Let's fill it out. Mark, have you heard anything about this?
No, I'm pretty sure that this is more made up scaremongering meant for their own domestic political consumption. And I have to say, Peter, I disagree with you. Friedrich Merz is a lot more Colonel Klink than he is Adolf Hitler, right? I see this.
I got the right motif. Right. Okay,
give me the right motif, right? Okay. Yeah, just the danger. As you pointed out, I mean, they can talk about buying weapons. First of all, they have no money. Germany has to go far deeper into debt and change their constitution to do so for a presumed military buildup, which we haven't seen anything of in the last 3 years. And frankly, I'm not going to hold my breath to see it. They want to buy weapons from the U.S. The U.S. doesn't have the munitions, doesn't have the Patriot missiles. It doesn't have the 155 millimeter artillery shells. It doesn't have the drones, despite Hegseth's frantic, very weird, embarrassing video where he tried to just proclaim the U.S. a drone power. That tells me how scared they are. They see.
Yeah, but I mean, we all saw that video. I thought that was kind of like it was like flies and lice. It looked like, you know, he was, you know, he's up against the world of insects. I mean, it was one of the most cringeworthy thing ever made by a government.
I think the U.S. is actually scared. I think they realize there's a realization in the Pentagon that, one, they have no air defense, and that's now been admitted to the world, right? The Patriot underperforms. They don't have the batteries. And their production of the interceptors for it is abysmal. They're out of stock. They can't defend Israel. They can't defend their own bases in the Middle East. They can't defend Ukraine. It was just announced to all the U.S. adversaries in the world that the U.S. has an Achilles heel, and it is air defense.
All right, let's hold the Achilles heel because we're going to talk about the other one. It's called the dollar in the next part of the program. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Jumanji, we're discussing some real news. George, let's switch gears here. Last week we had, I think it was the 17th annual BRICS Summit in Rio. And, you know, we cover BRICS here, I think, as much as anybody else here. We have various opinions over time and its effectiveness and its potential future. I'm warming up to BRICS a lot more than I have in the past because they're actually talking about concrete mechanisms, about trade, how statecraft and whatnot. It's maturing here. But it got into the news not because of what they said, but it is because Donald Trump is not very happy with BRICS. And America's favorite, and it's largely, if not completely, illegal under international law, throwing sanctions and tariffs at countries. It's on Trump's radar, it's on the West's radar, and it's all about dollar hegemony. George.
Well, it is, but when you say that Trump isn't happy, I mean, Trump isn't happy about many, many things. I mean, it's like every day he's unhappy about lots of different things. And he's particularly unhappy about one member of BRICS, and that is Brazil. because he's now got it into his head that Brazil is persecuting this good friend of his, Bolsonaro, and he likes Bolsonaro, and he identifies with Bolsonaro. He says, well, what's happening to Bolsonaro is very similar to what happened to me. So he's now hit Brazil with these 50% tariffs. Purely on account of the treatment of Bolsonaro. And then, really, if you think, what is he agitated about, just what he, in the past few days, well, it's the European Union, his great ally in this fight against Ukraine. He said, well, that's it. August the 1st, we're hitting you with 30% tariffs. I'm tired of talking to you. So these are your great allies, and you're hitting them with the tariffs. And that's on top of, you know, the tariffs that he announced against Japan and South Korea. That's also a 35% or whatever also in the past few days. So he's hitting his allies more than his purported adversaries. Now, I think BRICS is a really, it's a talking shop, it's economic cooperation. But they've made clear, and I think we have to accept it, that they're not going to come up with a currency of their own. They're not going to come up with a reserve currency. There's no point in just, you know, whipping up a kind of a fervor that, oh, they're going to come up with something that they challenge the dollar. And a lot of people who say this have a pecuniary interest in stirring up this hysteria. You know, people like Steve Bannon, he's continued to, oh, the end of the dollar empire, the end of dollar hegemony. But Bannon is making money on this. He's got all sorts of gold and silver in investments. So one always has to be just very wary of wildly overstated claims.
That's a fair critique, okay? But Mark, I mean, it's the BRICS is not a overt in the sense of like military or even financial. Does not look for a military and financial confrontation with the United States and the West. It just wants to avoid the West. It wants to get away from the West. Okay, it's slightly different, but it is important here because as George just pointed out, and maybe for Bolsonaro, just for his friend, he's going to apply the vast power of the U.S. government against the country because of a personal complaint that the president has. This is all the more reason why countries in BRICS and people that want to become BRICS want to avoid countries like the United States because, you know, they don't like our Minister of Justice, or, you know, the President of the United States is saying that charges in Israel should be dropped against the Prime Minister. I mean, this is, you want to avoid countries like that, particularly the most powerful one, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. And Lula spoke to this. He said, the world doesn't need an emperor, referring to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is seeking, I mean, he's blatantly demanding, right, political interference in Israel, right, political judicial interference in Israel, in Brazil. What is a tariff and what is a sanction now? A tariff is supposed to be a vehicle of economic policy, but he's using it as a punitive political sanction now, directly linking that with his tariffs of Brazil. So the two policies have converged. He just doesn't like the word sanction because his hero, William McKinley, you know, used tariffs. But there's really no difference now between them. And while BRICS as an organization, right, a lot of people have very romantic ideas, revolutionary ideas about BRICS Plus, which it is not. Most of the countries in BRICS do not want direct confrontation with the United States. But that doesn't matter, of course, because the U.S. is the hegemon. And the way the U.S. views the world, anyone that seeks to do politics or economics outside of their control is a threat to their hegemony. So whether BRICS views themselves as an anti-American alliance, America views them as an anti-American alliance, which is what Donald Trump said. And this is not the first time he said that. I think he understands that even if they're not creating an alternative global reserve currency, what they're doing is facilitating trade with each other in right. each other's currencies, i.e. not using the dollar. And that is still a threat to the U.S. It is a threat to their ability to print money, you know, to pay for everything. It's a threat to their $37 trillion national debt. It's a threat to their control of the world by control of the economic means of exchange. And Donald Trump realizes that. And he says, fine, you want an alternative? You want out of our control? You can do that, but you're going to pay a price for it. And he's going to level sanctions, he says, against all the members of BRICS and all of their partners, which again, tariff wars on top of tariff wars, which are really sanctions on the rest of the world for trying to escape US control.
Yeah, and George, it does reinforce the perception, obviously, in the global South that, we use the word hegemon, and obviously it's not a positive word. I mean, it's very descriptive, but I mean, it shows the inability of the political West to wean itself off of its kind of neocolonial thinking about the world. It's really quite amazing. We have, we've talked about wokeism and, neoliberalism, post-neoliberalism and all of this. But, at the end of the day, the way the West treats the world hasn't really changed in 500 years.
No, it hasn't, and there's no question. I mean that the primacy of the dollar enables the United States to dictate terms to the rest of the world because, as other countries have found, if the dollar is the most easy way to conduct trade, but if you do it in the dollars, then of course the United States is able to seize it. So you've got to work around it somehow to prevent the United States from just grabbing the dollars from countries that are trying to make a living. And Iran has found this, or Russia has found this. And there's no question, it's in everybody's interest to find some means of getting around this. And national currencies, that's a way to do it, but it's very limited because with national currencies, it's essentially, well, what are you going to do with it other than buy stuff from the country that issues that national currency? So in a way, it's a form of direct barter because you're accumulating rupees. Okay, that's great, but what are you going to do with the rupees? Since you can't convert them into dollars, well, you buy things from India. So it's not in any way a
Yes.
kind of a rival system. It's direct barter where you can do that, but it's not a very satisfactory system. And of course, the United States knows this, and the United States keeps punishing the rest of the world. But Mark is absolutely right that for the United States, even this little bit, this little thing of trying to get around the dollar hegemony by using national currencies, however limited, even that infuriates Washington.
Mark, one of the things that I think many emerging economies around the world, they've looked at what the sanction regime against Russia, and they've learned what kind of mechanisms you have to adapt. I mean, we both live here. The sanctions from the West, barely noticeable. There's some irritants, obviously, but it really hasn't, in a meaningful way, impacted the Russian economy. I'm sure the Chinese, even the Indians, are looking at this, what kind of mechanisms to protect, because the dollar is the lifeblood of the global financial system. We don't deny that. Weaning yourself off it is very, very difficult. But if you want to wean yourself off the dollar, you have to learn how to deal with potential sanctions. Mark.
Yeah, that's easier said than done.
Yep.
Russia has a lot of natural inherent advantages that small African, country or even large African countries, and so forth, Middle Eastern countries, they can't easily. First of all, Russia's the largest commodities of finite commodities, oil, gas, wheat, metal, name it. Russia is the commodity supplier to the world. Plus, they actually have an extremely large industrial base, which is something that the Pentagon is finding out to its woes. Russia is the most autarkic country in the sense that it is economically self-sufficient in the world to a degree. I mean, North Korea, you could say, survived as a hermit kingdom, but they didn't prosper. Russia has grown as a result of Western sanctions, because they're no longer buying Western goods, they're back to producing, everything themselves or trading with the rest of the world that is not a part of the West. And I think that is the lesson that needs to be taken on board, is simply to ignore the West. The rest of the world's economy has risen to a degree now that you can really simply cut out the West. You can ignore it to a very high degree. Problems like SWIFT, those would be the major things.
Yes.
But BRICS is working on a system
Yep.
to create an alternative to that right now. So there is dawn on the horizon. And I think within BRICS, Russia is hot at work helping create the nascent alternative economic system that will help other countries follow in their footsteps.
George, we have about a minute left. So, what's your prognosis for the week ahead? Epstein files and the Russia announcement. I saved it to the end, guys. Go ahead, George.
Well, I think it's the Russian announcement. And I think probably it'll go together with an announcement of increasing belligerence towards Russia, which will probably go beyond just this Lindsey Graham tariff bill. I think he's going to be planning to opening up new fronts against Russia. I mean,
Well, I
we
think
know that we can't.
the next time we meet, I think the new fronts is what we're going to talk about because there's a lot of them. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.